Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. We are not halfway through the year, but we are halfway through the UK Pro League year. 6 weeks down and six to go at the season-long domestic league, where major prizes will be on offer at finals week in December. The 11 weeks in the lead-up see players trying to amass enough UK Pro League ranking points to qualify for the elite 12-player men's field and 12-player women's field at that final showdown, picking up some decent prize money in the process. So last week in Aldershot, 18-year-old Louis Bowden became the first player to lift two UK Pro League trophies in 2023. Bowden only made his league debut in week four of the competition, where he finished in first place as an alternate, and after a fourth place finish in week five last month, he landed back in the top spot at week six with a defeat of the top seed. He took down Oscar Waitman 6-4-7-5 to complete his final tournament in the UK ahead of beginning his college tennis career out in the States. In the women's draw, Elise Maloney and Danielle Daly made it a final between the two highest ranked players in the field. It marks the fifth straight week of tennis for each of them, so a big effort to reach the title match, where 22-year-old Maloney recovered from a set and a break down to take the win 3-6, 6-4, 10-4 over Daly, who had won week three of the event in March. But thanks to the UK Pro League format, the players who win the week are not the only ones who get to finish with a victory. Another player who was triumphant on Saturday was Ryan Storey, whose 6-1-7-6 defeat of Ivan Denisov saw him finish up in third position. It is 25-year-old Storey who you are going to hear from on the podcast today, and he has some unique experiences to share. Aldershot was not his UK Pro League debut. There's a good story here. He actually made an appearance during week one at the National Tennis Centre back in January. He was on the last day of a coaching course at the NTC, so just happened to be there, and was having lunch when Sultan Gangji, the league referee, came into the cafe and said the tournament needed another player as soon as possible because someone had pulled out. That late call-up resulted in him playing tennis for the first time in a month that day, contesting his first singles tournament in a year and winning his first set 6-0. Not bad for the league debut. Back when he was a top international junior player, Ryan was singled out by big tennis names for his potential. Over the course of the next half hour, he details the reasons for his prolonged competitive absences since then and why it is that he's giving pro tennis another go. He also discusses his beginnings in show jumping and experiences of hitting with some of the best ATP players of the past two decades. And through it all, he really shows an impressive attitude towards the hurdles that have come his way. In his own words, here is Ryan Storey. Ryan Storey, great to have you on the podcast, but actually just great to see you out on court a fair bit over the past month. We're in Aldershot, where UK Pro League Week 6 has just finished. You've finished up in third place. Well done today. What are your feelings on the week that has been? How's the experience been for you?
I've really enjoyed it. It's got five matches in, so it's good to be back playing. And I've been playing quite well throughout the week, so I'm happy. And I had a close match yesterday against Oscar, lost that one 10-8 in the semis, and then came back today and played quite well. So yeah, I'm very happy. It's been a good week.
You came into playing Aldershot off the back of playing a couple of weeks in Nottingham. Did you play two or three weeks of that
swing? I played
all
of them.
All of them?
Yes, all three.
Off the back of Nottingham, did you have any expectations for yourself coming into the Pro League?
I had a couple of things that I wanted to focus on this week and kind of just work on. Obviously, there's money involved, but there isn't any points. So I did try and use it to work on a few things in like key moments, which I think I did quite a good job this week. Probably put a bit too much pressure on myself because I was playing good tennis in Notts a few weeks there, so I maybe had a bit too much. I put too much pressure on myself this week, maybe. But I ended up playing a good match to finish it, and so yeah, I'm feeling very good now. I'm happy.
always good to finish on a high with third position. And that's one of the great things about the UK Pro League. You can lose a match or two during the week, but still finish strongly. So that's good, I guess, for your confidence and positivity moving forwards. Usually, Ryan, on the podcast, we would at this point rewind right back to the beginning and I would ask you, were you born with a racket in hand and that kind of thing. But I think on this particular episode, for people listening, it would be good to know kind of what the past 1 or 2 or 3 years have looked like for you, because you might be a familiar name to some and they might not know where you've been, because I have been in tennis circles and not seen a whole lot of you outside of the walls of NTC. So why is that, Ryan, that you've only played a handful of tournaments this year? And I think you only played the one pro tournament right at the beginning of last season as well.
So I've actually been coaching for the last year, and I'm still coaching now. But the reason I stopped is because I got injured 2019. And then I had a couple of years off. I decided to come back, try and give it another go, but after about 5 or 6 tournaments, I was starting to feel my elbow again, and I ended up having to stop for like a good year again. That's when I went into coaching. But since I've started coaching, my body started feeling a lot better. So, with all these like tournaments in the UK, it's such a good opportunity to play all of them. So I just thought, why not? Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Was that a sudden decision, or was that something that you'd thought about for a little while, resuming competitive play?
Well, for a good like 6 months when I started coaching, it wasn't really crossing my mind too much. I was just coaching loads of hours and enjoying having lots of fun. And in just the last few months, I've been giving it a bit of thought. I see all these tournaments coming out in the UK and they're so close to me. It's tough to not play them. I've decided I'm just going to give it a go again while coaching and see how it goes.
Good for you. I think we'll touch a little bit more on the injury later, but just in terms of the coaching, I think maybe that's more of a thing within this level of the sport than people maybe realize, that players are balancing coaching as well as actually playing themselves. How easy or difficult have you found that balance since you started getting involved in these events again?
It's not too difficult. You just have to be very organized, and if you're not going to be there for a certain lesson, you need to find cover, and you just have to be very on it with like the communication side of it. And you have to be thinking like planning the week ahead, knowing what hours you're going to be coaching and stuff. It's all right. It's only been the last month that I've really been playing coaching. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm still planning to coach a lot and just try and play as well.
Are you working with a particular age group?
No, pretty much everybody really, just whoever wants a lesson.
Where do people go if they want a lesson from you? Where are you based?
I coach at Duke's Meadows in Chiswick. So I really like it there. It's good fun.
Yeah, it's got a good reputation, Duke's Meadows. We've seen quite a few players actually at Pro League from over there, so yeah, it definitely got a good rep. You had a good reputation, Ryan, in the early stages of your career. So at this point, rewind. You did. You had a very good junior career. You broke the top 25?
25 I was, I think, yeah.
There you go. You did. You broke the top 25. Yeah. That's a big effort in those early stages. But even before that, obviously, there would have been a time that you came across the sport initially. I heard that there were a few sports in your younger years, or at least multiple. So what were they and how did tennis stand out?
I started off playing football when I was like a little kid. I loved that. Then I also did like show jumping, because both my parents work in horse racing.
Of course.
So I grew up like on a racing yard and grew up like just riding horses from when I was a little kid.
Did they meet through that?
They met in horse racing. Yeah, before I was born, obviously.
Of course.
I don't know why I said that. And then I did show jumping until I was about 9, 10, and football the same, about 10. And then I moved to America when I was 11. That's when I stopped everything else and just played tennis.
Okay. Do you remember the first time you sat on a horse?
No. I mean, there's pictures of me on a horse when I was like 1 and 2, and I can't remember that.
I remember the first time I sat on a horse, because I would have been a little bit older. I think I was 11. And it looks so straightforward when you see people doing it. The moment that horse took a step, I felt like I was going to slide right off the edge. I will never forget that feeling. So how was the show jumping experience? Do you remember that feeling?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Actually, I haven't sat on a horse for like over 10 years now.
Right.
But I loved it when I was doing it as a kid. So enjoyable. Yeah. Great
and
feeling.
The football.
Yeah.
Where did that come from then? Because that's not so much parents' background.
It's just a kid growing up in the UK, you kind of just get into football, don't you? So I just started playing at school, and yeah, I would play on like a league team every week.
You were at an academy, right, for football or not? Youth academy?
I played for like Ipswich Youth Academy when I was about 10. But then I stopped pretty quickly after that.
So it was never really serious for you with football, or was it?
It's hard to be serious at that age, I think.
Okay.
I was playing it every day when I wasn't playing tennis. Yeah, but yeah, I just wanted to fake. When I was 11, I decided to go full in on tennis and stop everything else.
You said when you moved to the States.
Yeah.
So it was more I moved to the States and therefore I focused on tennis than I moved to the States to focus on tennis.
Yeah, I moved there because of my dad's job. So I had to go there. And then when I got there, that's when I decided that I was going to just focus on the tennis and kind of cut out everything else. I would still play football for fun and stuff, but nothing like I was doing with tennis.
How did you feel about the move to America?
I really enjoyed it. I loved it over there. It was pretty cool, 6 years. Yeah.
Do you think the opportunities at that age for you within tennis circles, I know you didn't move for that specifically, but do you think they put you in a better place than maybe you would have ended up staying here at that age particularly?
I think so. It was probably the best thing for my tennis to go over there. In California, it's an unbelievable setup for tennis. There's courts everywhere. There's so many people playing. The competition is amazing. It's so deep. So I think it definitely helped my tennis.
Is there anything that particularly stands out for you as a stage of your development that was particularly key out there, whether it be a match or just someone that you were training with? What's kind of the standout from your time over there in the States?
I was there for a few years before I really started seeing a few coaches. I'd be hitting a lot, playing a lot of tournaments. But then there was a couple coaches in particular that really helped me, like really pushed me to like the next level. And yeah, the reason I got to the level I did in juniors was probably because of these couple of coaches. They gave me a lot of time, helped me on the court and off court as well. And yeah.
Any familiar names?
One of them was called Brian Teacher. He was, I think he got to 7 in the world, won the Australian Open. So when I was like 15, he helped me a lot. And then there was another coach called John Letts. I trained at his academy and he helped me a lot as well.
Having the backing and the time of people like that who were so accomplished and obviously saw you as someone that was worth investing time and energy in, did that have any impact on you at all in terms of confidence or pressure or any of that kind of thing?
Yeah, when you have somebody like Brian in particular, like who's giving you a lot of time and helping you a lot and believing in you, kind of helps you a lot as well, because you suddenly believe in your level a lot more. And you actually think, oh, I'm a good tennis player. And then you end up playing better, you improve, just for him kind of believing in you because you know the level that he's played. So, yeah, definitely.
Did you play all the junior Grand Slams?
I didn't go to Australia. I stayed in Europe for that.
It's a bit of a distance there.
Yeah, and then I played all the others.
Favourite?
Definitely Wimbledon, yeah.
Okay.
Has to be.
And I think I would be right in saying around maybe junior time, when you were one of those top juniors, you got the opportunity to train with, hit with some bigger tennis names, some, I guess, more or less stars of the sport. Which of those stand out to you and what are your memories from them? What did you learn from that?
I played with Murray quite a few times, which is obviously amazing. I mean, growing up watching him almost every day. And he's a great guy as well. But yeah, those sessions are obviously very good. The first time I ever hit with him actually was at US Open. in between one of my match days. So that was very nice of him. And then a few years ago, when I was at Wimbledon, I signed up as like a hitter. I hit with a lot of the top guys there, like Del Potro, Cilic, and a few others. And yeah, it's a great experience just hitting with those guys, feeling like their weight of ball and seeing how they play and how they go about things, like just through a practice session. It's definitely helps a lot.
Tell everyone a little bit more about that one then, because I myself was not aware that this was a thing until maybe last year, the year before. British players can sign up to be a hitter during the championships. How does the process for getting into that work?
I actually can't remember fully. I think I just kind of mentioned it to one of the guys, one of the referees there, and he just said, "I'll put your name down." And yeah, that's how it happened. I actually don't really remember. Yeah,
that's all good. You can't remember everything. But in terms of when you were hitting with these guys, so whether it was when you were younger hitting with Andy Murray or a bit older at the championships going toe-to-toe with these guys, did you ever feel intimidated? Did you feel like you belonged? What were your personal feelings being in that situation?
I mostly just looked like forward to playing with them. Like, obviously very excited, just good opportunity. And yeah, I would just make the most of it. I wasn't really any nerves or anything like that. And just, yeah, it's very fun to hit those guys. So I would love every second of it.
Okay, so we mentioned top junior ranking. At some point you would have made the transition onto the ITF Pro Tour. That was about 2017, 2018, is that about the time
about
frame?
About then, yeah.
Okay, how did you find that transition, going from being a top junior to, I guess, having to start at square one in the pro game?
It's obviously, it can be quite tough, because you've got to play qualifying, and then you get into main draw, and then you playing for your first points. I end up quite a big deal playing for your first point. And it took me 6 or 7 tries, I think. But then once I got those first few points, suddenly it kind of carries on rolling, and suddenly you're in the main draw of futures every week compared to qualifying, which helps a lot. Because, yeah, getting through those qualifying stages can be tough because they're all good players.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people can't appreciate. The team sports are all supporting so many players at the top of the sport, whereas tennis is an individual sport, so obviously they're less players are facilitated for at the top. Doesn't mean there's not quality right the way through the rankings, and it can be so tough out there at those ITFs when you've got a guy with 4 digits next to his name who can really play. And I know you're one of those guys at the moment because you've not been around so much.
1800,
And someone probably hates seeing your name on the opposite side of their draw, knowing that, hey, it's round one of qualies or something, and they have to go up against that kind of opposition. But obviously other players was not the only opposition that you dealt with. You mentioned that injury that cropped up. Was that quite a sudden thing, or was it something you noticed gradually in 2019?
Probably like the year before, I would have elbow in like problems here and there, but nothing too bad. You can't just play through it thinking just tennis and you get that sort of stuff. And then I went on one trip to Africa where it got pretty bad, and I had to come home early because of it. And yeah, I just saw some specialists and they found out what was wrong with it, and yeah, that's when I had to have an operation and take some time out.
Was it tennis elbow? Is that the name for it or not?
I had cartilage damage on the inside of my elbow. So not ideal.
No. Did they give you any kind of insight as to recovery time, whether you would be able to play through it and deal with it? Or were there big question marks at that point in time?
When I first went to see the specialist, I wasn't entirely sure what was going to happen. He said it was quite bad on the inside, so he was a bit unsure if I would be able to play tennis like at a very high level again. So I had to take a good 6 months with no tennis, and then slowly build it up with like sponge, orange, green ball for a good few months. Then it was the serving that was the main problem, which took a while, but. Yeah, there was no period of time that I was definitely going to be out. It was kind of just seeing how it went, and when it got better, I would give it a go.
Did you make any adjustments in terms of service motion, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I tried to change my serve when I first came back, but I didn't really feel like it was helping much, so I ended up just going back to my regular serve. But now when I've actually come back this the second time, now I've shortened my serve up, and it seems to be helping it out this time. Yeah, so I'm just trying to manage that and serve a lot smarter, not go full beans every time.
Yeah, and smart actually it seems to be quite a key word in terms of your game. I mean, I was watching you earlier. I've not had obviously a lot of opportunity to watch you, and you seem to have pretty good tennis IQ in terms of kind of thinking your way through the match. And look, I know it's early days, and you're coming back, and there are a lot of things you want to work on and fix, but you can definitely see those elements in your game. And obviously, they were noticed very early on, but you had this setback in 2019. I feel like this question comes up so much, but it's a massive obstacle for so many players in recent times because no one had ever seen anything like it. So lockdown 2020, for you, was that... I mean, let's take, for example, so Katie Dunn was on the first episode of the second series, said really timely for her because she was dealing with injury. Did you feel the same way, like it was buying you a little bit of time?
Yeah, it actually worked out quite well because I stopped just before I was in. I can't remember exactly, but I had my operation in 2019, and then I was out for a bit of COVID anyway, and then I was only building it up during COVID. So the timing was very good for me. Actually, I didn't really miss much. It was all right for me.
Tennis outside of lockdown and the pandemic is kind of a sport that never stops. In fact, if you're competing on the ITF circuit, you don't even have to take an off season. Those events just run through December. You can literally play through Christmas week. So I guess a lot of players often feel like they're in a race against the clock, can't take too much time out here and there. And then there's also, that's a problem because everyone else is progressing and everyone else is climbing. Now, I know that in your early years, you had some wins that look pretty decent nowadays over the likes of Alex Dimonor, Felix Auger-Aliassime.
Yeah.
Both players that have either formerly or currently been ranked inside the top 20. With you kind of being set back so much, did you chart the progress of these guys and how they were doing? Was it hard to watch that when you were restricted so much?
No, I didn't find it hard at all, really. It's kind of what happens, and you just have to go around, to find a way around it and just do the best that I can. Obviously, I still watch them all the time. I just focus on myself, really, and try to do the best I can in whatever I'm doing, coaching or playing or whatever it is.
Impressive perspective and a key quality, I guess, to have when it comes to things happening on the court. So you're an avid tennis watcher then? You're watching a lot of tennis?
Pretty much every day.
Really? Oh,
definitely every day, yeah.
Who's the go-to player or players for you?
Alcaraz is my favourite now. Yeah, I love watching him. And then there's a few others, but he's definitely top of my list.
And then when you're out on court, when you're coaching or when you're playing, are you thinking about trying to implement any of that? Do you think it subconsciously has an impact on you, or are you very much kind of focused on yourself?
Side of it with the tennis or
game style, things they're doing, anything like that? Does that have an impact on anything you're doing in terms of your coaching or your playing?
When I'm coaching the younger players, I'm always using these top players like examples if I'm trying to help somebody with something, or like technique or strategy or whatever it is. You always like refer to those guys and use them as like an example. All the time, really.
It sounds like your attitude's setting a pretty decent example as well. So I wonder how you coped with situations like you came back in 2021, didn't play a full season 2021, maybe a handful of tournaments at the back end of the year. Off the back of a break, you won your second tournament back. It was a 15K.
Yeah.
Do you remember the country?
Bulgaria, yeah.
Okay. And you'd already won an event at that level in 2019, which was the year where you started to get hampered by injury. Being able to do that so quickly off the back of a break, what was the stronger feeling? Was it encouragement that your level was there, or frustration that you weren't being left in a position where you could regularly produce that?
I think one of the biggest things I've learned is that when I have all this time out and come back, you don't really lose your level. Your like level was always there. It's more just getting the consistent training in and getting the consistent like competition in, and staying healthy. Because your level doesn't go. And that's one thing that I've definitely learned by playing those tournaments after a couple of years out and doing well straight away. And even now I'm playing very good tennis and I've only just started playing again. So yeah, it's just trying to manage my body now and trying to keep competing most weeks.
The way you're able to see the positives outside of a match situation, do you still have that quality within a match in the moment when you're playing the points, or is it tougher to have that perspective on the match court?
It is a lot tougher on the match court, I have to say. I've been pretty good since I've been competing these few weeks, but there's been one or two times where I've, yeah, could have been a little bit better. But now that I've had this coaching experience, I understand what I'm doing and what I could do better and what I've done well in matches. I understand it a lot better now. Now I've seen the coaching side of it, which I think is helping me a lot.
To what I've witnessed, you've always seemed to stay within tennis circles, whether you've been playing or whether you... Do you even live with tennis players? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I live with Alistair Gray and Gabriella Taylor.
Okay. And so you've always been in those circles. You've never really had a break from it. You would think that some players, with the struggles that you've had, might find it a bit much to be constantly surrounded by that. Do you think that has helped you, always being within those circles?
Yeah, definitely. It keeps you in the sport and you're always around them. So I've always, even when I was out, I'd be around tennis and you're always chatting tennis. So yeah, it definitely helps.
Gabby and Ali and the people you're living with, did any of them encourage you to actually try pro tennis again, or was that mostly your own initiative?
It definitely came from me. And then I would have chats with some people that and discuss it with them. But it's mostly my own decision and, yeah, just loving tennis and wanting to compete again.
So have you set any goals, or is this literally a step-by-step thing?
No, I'm still thinking about it, really. I've only just recently decided that I want to play again and play a lot more. So I'm still in the process of, thinking what I want to do exactly, because,
Your parents, are they still in the show jumping world?
No, they're in the horse racing.
Okay, yeah. All right, okay, so sorry, but they're still in that world.
Yeah, still in it, yeah.
How have they felt about your tennis journey along the way, and how do they feel about you now going back out on the court?
Yeah, they're very supportive. That was one thing when I did stop playing. That was one of the hardest things to stop playing, because they've obviously given me so much. But when I did tell them, they were still very supportive and understood. So they've been great, really.
You sound so chilled out. Everything that we've discussed, you're so laid back. What's been the toughest part in everything that you've gone through? Has there been a low moment, or have you always been able to keep this perspective that you're, well, this attitude that you're talking with right now?
When I did stop, it was obviously very tough to stop playing. But I tried to just focus on something new, and instead of doing nothing and thinking about having stopped and having the injuries, I try and focus it on other stuff. Like I went full into coaching, or I went through stages where I was running loads and going to the gym, and I always try and look at the positive sides.
Doing a good job of it. Okay, so this laid back attitude that you have off the court, do you think that has the potential to be detrimental for you when you're actually on the match court?
I definitely play my best tennis when I'm more laid back, but trying to find that good balance of still being hyped up. I'm still always trying to find like the perfect balance. Like when I played Oscar yesterday, I lost 10-8 in the breaker and I was probably a bit too chilled. Then I had one match where I was getting too hyped up. Today I found a good balance and I was calm, but I was also a bit fiery.
In your younger days, how often were you able to find the balance, and can you see a big difference from then compared to now with that?
Especially since coaching, I feel like I understand it a lot better, and my attitude is a lot better now. I'm just a lot more confident on the court, understand what I'm doing a lot more. My junior days I was very up and down, so I've definitely learned a lot and from those days and from the coaching as well.
Okay, then, what do the next few weeks, next few months look like for you, or do you plan that as you go?
I'm not too sure, really. Yeah, I'm just going to take it every couple of weeks at a time and just see what there is. Because there's tournaments every week, so there's no pressure, really.
Hitter at Wimbledon?
Yeah, I'll probably do that. Why not? It's a lot of fun.
Look out for him in all whites at the championships. Ryan, it's been great to talk to you and get to know you and your story a little bit better. Oh, there's the pun, the accidental pun. Ryan's story. Let's settle this. Before we came on the mic, I was going to call you Ryan Story, but what's the background with the name?
Well, everybody says story, and I say it as well, but the proper way to say it is story. From my dad, Scottish side. But yeah.
Do you feel Scottish?
Not really, no.
Sorry to any Scots listening. Ryan Story is officially an Englishman, and you'll see him maybe at one of the biggest tournament in England later this summer. So Ryan, again, thank you for taking the time. And that was Ryan Story's story. Fist bump on that.
Cheers.
You're very welcome. Thanks for taking the time. Yes, indeed. So that is Ryan's story. It's great to see him back on the match court, and long may the comeback continue. What does continue, and rarely seems to stop these days, as Ryan referenced, is tennis in the UK. Not the podcast, the thing itself. The Progress Tour is staging another 25k UTR events, which is another round-robin prize money competition, in London this week, with live streams available on the Universal Tennis YouTube channel, so check them out. If you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, I don't ask this enough, but it would be very cool if you could share it on social media so that it can reach more people. You can tag the podcast on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK, and on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. I am also on both platforms at Abigail Tennis. I post incessantly, so you probably know this. I'll be back next week with the second part of Katie Dunn's appearance on the podcast. She discusses some heavy topics very openly and thoroughly. So if you haven't heard the first part of her story yet, make sure to listen to that episode ahead of next week when she and I will be back with you. Until then, thank you for listening and see you back here soon.